welcome you to our worship service here this morning. You're visiting. We're glad that you're here. I know in the summertime it's very difficult to determine who is here and who isn't because of the way the schedule is. We're getting close now to school time. I know that's not necessarily a word certain people want to hear, but it's what it is, isn't it? And as we get into now a study in preparation for, as it were, back into what I call a regular routine. Summertime to me is pretty hectic. I don't know about you, but as you get into more of a regular routine, start thinking about now more of where we stand. It's almost like let's take some evaluation as to where we are right now and sort of see what we can do to close out the year in a great way. Always is it important to take basic passages and apply them to life. So today I'm going to take one verse, and then I'm going to build off of this verse on other verses, 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12. I would hope by now, if you're an adult, you've memorized this verse a long time ago. If you're a young person, you need to memorize this verse because it applies particularly to youth. But in principle, it's beyond any kind of restriction to age. It applies in principle to anybody, gender, age, background, whatever. Paul tells Timothy, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word and conversation and charity and spirit and faith and purity." That's the King James Version. In this particular setting, you will find that Paul gives a charge to Timothy in chapter 3, verses 14 and 15. "These things write unto thee, hoping to come unto you shortly, but if I tarry, that thou mayest know how thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God, the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth." So I don't have any wonder why Paul wrote the book of 1 Timothy to Timothy. Those verses right there tell me. "I am writing this, Timothy, if I don't show up very, very soon, which I hope to, but if I don't, so that you will know how to behave in the house of God." By the way, that verse has nothing to do with how you act in a church building. By the way, that's another lesson. That's a totally another lesson that has to do with how we conduct ourselves in the assembly. The house of God there refers to the church of the living God, the people, not the building. And he's talking about as a family member. Household of God means the family feature. If you look at chapter 5 of 1 Timothy, verse 1, he'll talk about, "Rebuke not an elder, an older man, but exhort him as a father, the older women as mothers," and so forth, "younger ones with brothers with as brothers, and the younger sisters as sisters with all purity." So the point is, he is discussing the church from a family feature. Timothy, you're a young man, by the way. According to 2 Timothy, he was still a young man. 2 Timothy 2:22, "Flee youthful lust." I don't know how long Timothy lived when he died, but the Bible tells us from Acts 16, where we first learn of him, to the last verse in 2 Timothy, that he was still a youth all the way through. Now, while this is applying to a young man who did evangelistic work, while he was still young, even in 2 Timothy when Paul died, the principle still applies. Be thou an example of the believers in the church, in the family of God, where you work. By the way, it goes without saying that we are to be a bright and shining light to the world, right? "Let your light so shine before men," that's not just the church, "before men, that they who, those out in the world, might see your good works, glorify your Father which is in heaven." Matthew 5, verse 16. But this particular verse is where we want to focus. Now, there are three things. I'm going to divide this verse into three parts. "Let no man despise thy youth," that's part one. "Be thou an example of the believers," that's part two. And part three, "in word, conversation, charity, spirit, and faith, and purity," that's part three. But if I were to summarize those three parts, I would put it in that structure right there I've got on this wall, or I'm looking at the back screen, by the way. How do you esteem your own self? Let no man despise your youth. Well, what in the world does despise mean? Because I'm not to let anybody do that to me, even if I was young. So it has to do with to take lightly, to devalue, to not consider as a valuable person yet because you're a youth, because you're not of the adult classification as you would find in the Bible an old man or an old woman. By the way, what does old mean, by the way, in the Bible? Sort of a relative term. I think we're all young to Methuselah, right? 969 years old. Okay. By the way, Adam was 930 when he died, so he's right up there close to Methuselah. But obviously the next part, be thou an example of believers. An example before others. By the way, it didn't say an example to the believers. That goes without saying. An example of the believers. By the way, that's sign language, O-F, of the believers. Okay. In other words, you're an example of what a believer is supposed to be. And then last of all, the essentials to demonstrate. By the way, it's not an encompassing list. It's only six of them. Word, conversation, manner of life, charity, by your love, spirit, attitude, faith, the determination of your conviction of heart to live for God, and impurity in view of the moral situation that you find around the world. By the way, does that not apply to old folks too? As well as to youth. But particularly to youth. The choices you and I make in our young age, do they have any effect on our lives as we get older? If I make a bad choice in my youth, by the way, there's all kind of choices you can make in your youth, you know, whether I wear a blue shirt or a white shirt in a pulpit. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about religious, moral choices. Do those choices, do they follow you for the rest of your days? I mean, I could go through a laundry list of those kinds of choices and the consequences. If I make a bad choice, I can be forgiven of it. But are there lingering consequences that go with that? Sure there are. If I make a good choice, are there lingering consequences that go with that? Sure there are. Matter of fact, turn to 1 Timothy chapter 5. Notice the last two verses. I didn't put this on a slide, but look at the last two verses. Because Paul is trying to get Timothy to understand that when you look at the world, right and wrong, when you look at the world, understand about the judgment of God that can come now. If not now, it will come in that day. Note the last two verses. Some men's sins are open beforehand. Beforehand what? Before the judgment day. And some men, they follow after. Which means sometimes people can do wrong and not reap the full consequences of their choice in this life. But that does not mean you won't in the day of judgment. Then look at the next verse. He starts with the bad side and he ends up on the good side. Likewise also the good works of some are manifested beforehand. In other words, are there not some things that can come to you in this life with good choices? Sure they can. And he says, and they that are otherwise, in other words, if I serve God and I don't reap the full benefits even in this life, does that mean I'm never going to reap any benefits? It's sort of vain to serve God now because I'm suffering. He says, no. They that are otherwise cannot be hid. In other words, in the day of judgment, it'll all come out. It'll all come out. So be very careful in your perspective. It looks like the wicked prosper in this life. It looks like the righteous aren't reaping any rewards in this life. By the way, there's a song in the Psalm 73, that addresses that. He said, my feet almost slipped when I saw the prosperity of the wicked, because I thought it looks like wickedness is prosperous and righteousness is to be devalued. And then he says, then I went into the sanctuary of the Lord, and then learned I their end. Then I understood, because I learned from God. Okay? So we'll talk about these three charts. Let's start now with self-esteem. How do you see yourself? By the way, our society today is big into self-esteem. I don't know if you know that or not, but it has been for decades. People have been talking about we don't want anybody to feel bad. That's when you give trophies to everybody in an athletic competition. By the way, the same trophy. You know, you might put a little wording on it a little different, but everybody gets the same size, same look trophy. By the way, do the kids that win it all know the difference between who's the winner and who didn't win? By the way, do the parents know that, even though you want to award everybody the same thing? The Bible doesn't know anything about rewarding evil. And the Bible doesn't know anything about not blessing righteousness. If I do wrong, I ought to feel bad. Understand? If I do what's wrong, my conscience should hurt. I should feel guilty. Such guilt of godly sorrow that would work me to repentance unto salvation, 2 Corinthians 7, verse 10. Now, if I do what's right, should I not feel good about that? Should I not understand the value of what my Father thinks about that and what those that are of God think about that? Well, by the way, the world's not going to like righteousness, regardless of whether you do right or wrong. But I'm not here to please the world. I'm here to please God and also to have a respect of those that also want to please God. So there are verses in the Bible that talk about how you see yourself, like 2 Corinthians 13:5. Examine yourselves whether you be in the faith. Prove your own selves. Know you not your own selves, that Jesus Christ is in you, except you be reprobates. The word reprobate there is from a word that means void of understanding. Unless if it's the case you don't understand. So I am, by the way, according to that passage, as Paul wrote 2 Corinthians, I am to check myself. How do you stand before God? Listen to me. It's not how you start that matters. Though that's important, right? It's how you end that matters. It's not how you start so much as it is how do you end. Saul, king of Israel. You remember Saul, first king of the United Kingdom? How did he start out? Did he start out a humble man? A man that didn't even want to be king. He hid himself among the baggage the day Samuel was going to anoint him as king before the people. How did he end up at the end of the book of 1 Samuel? How did he end up? What was his life like from the time that all of a sudden David arises on the scene and Saul eyed him from that point on and hated him to the point of desiring to put him to death? Had his whole nation centered on that one mission. This is public enemy number one of the Israelite nation. And David was the man after God's own heart. How did Saul, king of Israel, end up? How did Saul of Tarsus start out in the book of Acts? In Acts chapter 7. It's where you find him first time. How does he end up? In 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6 through 8. See, it's not so much the start as it is the finish. Examine yourselves whether you be in the faith. Well, I've been in the faith for 40 plus years. How are you right now? How are you right now? Prove your own self. Take this and use this as the measuring stick to see how you line up. I don't know about you, but the more I read my Bible, the more I find things in there that make me not so much comfortable with myself at times. By the way, it's called the need to improve. The divine side of the church is always going to be great. Father, Son, Holy Spirit, the whole plan of salvation. So that's always going to be 100% perfect, doesn't need any changing. Look at the human side of the church. Look at the human side. Come on, guys, look around this auditorium. And look at some of these empty seats that I'm looking at. I know it's July. I know it's summer. Let me tell you something, folks. You don't take a vacation from God. Don't take a vacation from God. If I'm really converted to Jesus Christ and to God the Father, that day I was baptized, what in the world is the first day of the week going to mean to me? Well, you say, well, you're the preacher. That's your job. No, I wasn't baptized to be a preacher. I was baptized to be a Christian. Now, what I do in this pulpit right now is the work of a preacher. When I get out of this pulpit, that's the work of a Christian. It has nothing to do with me being a preacher. I pray for the sick because I'm a Christian. I reach out to those that are lost because I'm a Christian. Because you see, somebody reached out to me years ago through the gospel. When I obeyed the gospel, I hadn't been the same since. So let's take a checkup from the neck up, all right? Prove your own selves. Do you not know your own selves that Jesus Christ is in you unless you are void of understanding? Because by the way, they were being vacillated back and forth by these false teachers. They didn't know whether they were of God or of something else. And Paul says, I'm the one that brought the gospel to you. Do you not understand this? Look at Romans 12 and verse 3. By the grace of God that was bestowed upon all men, he talks about how that we ought not think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think, but to think soberly according to the measure of the grace of God that was given unto us. Not to think of ourselves more highly. It doesn't say not to think high of yourself. It says don't think more highly than you ought to think, but to think soberly. Soberly. Who is the only preeminent person in the church according to Colossians 1:18? Who is he? He's the head of the body, the church, the fullness of him, that in all things he might have the preeminence. Who is that? That's Jesus Christ. What about all the rest of us? I ought not think of myself more highly than I ought to think. Go ask Diotrephes in the book of 3 John what he thought about himself. What did Diotrephes think? He's the one that loved to have the preeminence. Matter of fact, he would keep certain people from coming into the church. John says, and when I come, I'm going to deal with that. By the way, who added you to the church? The Lord did. Who can take you out? The Lord does. Man can't do God's work for him. Man's to do his work for God. 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 6, Paul says, these things I have transferred in a figure to Apollos and myself, that no man should think of himself. What? More than what is written. Written. In other words, when the Bible tells me that I'm made in the image of God, I'm to accept that. When the Bible tells me that Christ died on the cross for my sins, I am to accept that. That shows the value of a human being. By the way, that's even Christian or non-Christian. That's the value of the soul of man, saved or lost. Paul said, some of you folks are elevating Apollos and me and even Cephas, Peter, to positions that only Christ has. I'm writing these things to you and talking about I planted, Apollos watered, but it is God that gave the increase. I didn't grow this church. God grew this church, Paul would say. I was just a planter. I was just the one that put the seed in good ground. Apollos came behind me and he watered that. And the church here belongs to God. That's why in 1 Corinthians 1, verse 2, it's called the church of God at Corinth. The church didn't belong to Paul. It's not the church of Paul. It's not the church of Apollos. It's not the church of Cephas. It's the church of God. That's what Paul tells Timothy in 1 Timothy 3:15, right? The church of the living God, pillar and ground of the truth. So how am I to see myself? See myself. Let no man despise thy youth. Now, that doesn't take place so much today anymore because I'm in my late 50s, so to speak. But I remember. I remember when I was 22 years old, right out of Fried Hardeman. Y'all know what trying out for a church is? Brother Tony, you know what trying out for a church is? Brother Woods, you go to a congregation, you preach that. It's supposed to be your best sermon so that the leadership and the membership, the eldership is supposed to say, well, we'd like for you to be the local preacher, your tryout sermon. By the way, I don't know what that is. It's just a sermon is all it is. I remember at 22 years old, went to Virginia. Pam went with me. Went to Lebanon, Virginia, by the way. Y'all think, West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky and so forth. Western Virginia is right up there with the mountains. And I remember preaching there, and I remember going down below Hansville and preached at six different places trying to find just somewhere to work as a local preacher. Tried out at a congregation in North Alabama over here in Lauderdale County. I'm going to name the congregation. They know who they are. Most of those folks probably are dead by now that were in that general men's business meeting. And they told me, says, Brother Clark, we appreciate your sermon. And we enjoyed it. Matter of fact, it's had a lot of Bible in it. And right now, it's down between you and one other man. By the way, that's encouraging. Wouldn't you think a 22-year-old preacher would be encouraged by it's down to you and one other man? Because, by the way, I hadn't heard that from a lot of folks. So I'm thinking, well, they're very complimentary, and I'm waiting on the telephone call. So I leave that Sunday evening and go home and sort of sitting on pins and needles hoping the call would be in the middle of the night that night, but it didn't come. And then later on, didn't get a call. And then later on, found out the other guy got the call. So you're back to square one. Later on, I found out the explanation. Word came back to me that the reason the men did not want me a part of this particular work, it wasn't that I wasn't preaching the truth, and it wasn't that I wasn't, you know, they didn't think I would be a good fit for that congregation. Here's the explanation. We just wanted an older man. That's the explanation. And here's what I said to my mother and daddy. I can't get any older than I am right now as hard as I try. I can't get any older any faster than what I'm doing right now. And I'm going to tell you, I heard that more than once down the stream of time. We're just looking for an older man. That was the factor. By the way, probably now it would be we're looking for a younger man. Because, by the way, there are congregations that would want somebody under 50 years old. I know that for a fact. I know our brotherhood. We're looking for a younger man, somewhere between his late 20s and his early 40s. And by the way, he's got 50 years preaching experience. We're looking for a younger man. And every time I heard, we're looking for an older man, here's what I thought. Let no man despise thy youth. That is the line of the Bible that came to my mind every time I was rejected. We're looking for an older man. Young folks, let me tell you something. You're not the future of the church. Y'all listening to me, by the way? I'm looking around, but a lot of y'all are not the future of this church. You are the present day of this church. Jump in your role, and we will shout your praises to the top of this roof. You are the present day history of this church. I had a preacher one time get in my face with that statement right there one time. I just started preaching, and he said, Don't be so centered on these older men out here and older women in the church. You get in that gap and you feel it. Having been here a few years, like some of you have been here a few years, how many of you remember the people that used to lead singing in this congregation that are now dead and gone? How many of you remember the people that taught the Sunday school classes that are now dead and gone? When I first moved here, there were three men who were the elders of this church: Floyd, Sidney, and Paul Pepper. That was the three elders of this congregation. Pray tell me where they are right now. I'll tell you guys something. The success of the longevity of local congregations is that young people realize if we don't step in the gap and fulfill and take on these roles and these shoes, we, by pure inactivity, will let a congregation die. This past week, I was in a gospel meeting at Hubbardville, Alabama. By the way, 1A school, like Athens Bible School, 1A school. When I looked at what I call the scoreboard, okay, what they have on the wall, attendance, contribution last Sunday, and so forth, I know it's gospel meeting beginning. We had, as we say, dinner on the ground. Had 37 last Sunday. 37. And I was one of 37. Sunday before, had 16. 16. Brother Frank Hubbard, who's one of the elders there, told me that Dad preached the very first gospel meeting in 1953 or 52 in the very church building I was preaching in last week. He says, your dad conducted the very first gospel meeting when we dedicated this building. A congregation had well over 100. Folks, they got 16. Go around Limestone County and see if you don't find something like that in this county. You find it? You see it? By the way, if a family of four with a membership of 16 goes on vacation, what does that do to your attendance? What does it do? By the way, how about you guys waiting on the Lord's Supper table? Y'all want to do that every Sunday? Because you're the only guys there to do it. What if you go on vacation? How about your song leader? By the way, is it discouraging to the preacher? By the way, the preacher in the middle of the gospel meeting last week apologized for the attendance. Apologized. And by the way, I'm the one supposed to be doing the preaching. I thought, please don't say anything else. Just let me get in the pulpit and preach. The average size of churches of Christ historically worldwide is 50. Average attendance is 50 worldwide. Take all members of churches of Christ, divide that by number of congregations known, and the total is 50. Let me tell you something, folks, of the Bethel Church of Christ, you're in a large church. Understand it. You are in a large congregation, brotherhood-wide. Let's so show some spirituality. Be thou an example of the believers. 1 Corinthians 11:1, Paul said, be ye followers of me, as I also followers of Christ. Some translations say, be ye imitators of me, as I also am an imitator of Christ. The Greek word is mimetai, mimic, mimic. In Titus chapter 2 and verse 7, Paul told Titus, in all things show thyself an example, a pattern, a pattern of good works in sincerity and doctrine, uncorruptness, and all the patterns. Philippians chapter 3 and verse 17, Paul tells the church at Philippi that you have us as an example and not to walk as they, these false teachers, are walking, as you have us for an example. Think about that. Can you imagine a member of the Bethel Church of Christ walking up to someone that's wanting to follow error and saying, look, you got me as an example as to how to follow, how to walk. And when you look at their life and you look at mine, do you not see a difference? Look, get your mind and eyes off of that and put your eyes on me. You say, well, Paul's an apostle. Paul's a preacher. It goes with the territory that a preacher is supposed to be the best example of a local congregation. Let me tell you something. God's no respecter of persons. He judges me just like He judges you. Folks, I was a Christian long before I was a preacher. And the fact of the matter is, we are to be an example of believers. I'm to be an example of a believer, not an example of a preacher. I'm to be an example of a believer. Now, how about you? All of these verses here are saying, don't look at the world. Look at here. Look here. Keep your eyes here. There's not an adult who's a member of the church of this congregation ought not be able to look in the face of every one of these young people in this congregation and say, let me be your model. Let me be your model. Someone says, you're a sad picture of a model because I can tell you everything wrong with you. Maybe so. But at least I'm trying. Do you understand I'm trying? When I mess up, I'll tell you I messed up. Let me be your model. Folks, if we're not going to step forward and be the models for the next generation, tell me what's out here that's going to be the model. What's out here? Hollywood? By the way, that's Hollyweird. What about the entertainment industry as a whole? And I would even say Nashville, even country music. What kind of model are you looking for? I want to tell you something. The Lord's looking for examples. And the Holy Spirit, through Paul, said, Timothy, I'm looking at you to be an example of the believers. Now let's move to the last part. In some spiritual specifics, in word, in what comes out of your mouth. I wished he had left that out, to be honest with you. But I know what God's going to do. He's going to do what's needed. And what comes out of the mouth. Lie not one to another. Right? Ephesians chapter 4. And about verse 25. In other words, what's supposed to come out? Truth to the use of edifying. In other words, what comes out of the mouth ought to be an example of what a real believer is like. Manner of life. Conversation, as King James says. How am I to live on Monday? By the way, like I'm living right now. By the way, I haven't heard anybody in this room say a cuss word from the whole time you've been in this building. I haven't heard the first curse word in the whole room. But let me ask you a question. When you go to work or wherever tomorrow, is a cuss word going to come out of your mouth as though that's a part of your vocabulary? I used to work secular jobs between semesters or years at Fried Hardeman. And I worked with the world, except for a couple of examples. I worked for members of the church. But I remember one year working for the mayor of Bremen. And I want to tell you, that man had a vocabulary. If it didn't have four-letter words in it, he didn't know how to talk. If he ever got mad, if he ever hit his thumb, by the way, just plug your ears up, because it was fixing to roll forth. And he didn't care who heard it. He's like a drunk sailor who didn't think the world, you know, was the best thing for him. I've also told my family, if I ever get Alzheimer's, I'm going to explain something to you. I know all the cuss words. I know them all. They're all in my head. I've heard them. I've heard them from gym locker rooms to coaches to workers. I know all the cuss words. And by the way, what Alzheimer's does is take your brain out of control and lets whatever you got trapped in there out. So if it starts rolling out, it's not me, okay? It's the disease. But let me tell you something. I know the words, don't you? Then why don't you let them come rolling forth since you know them? Because you're a believer is why you don't do that. It's because you serve another master, and it's not Satan. It's the Lord who died for you and rose again. Galatians 5, 22-23, fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance, against such there is no law. Ephesians 4, 20, verses 20-24. But you have not so learned Christ. If so be, you've heard the truth, as the truth is in Jesus. That you put off the old man concerning the former conversation, corrupting his deeds. And that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind. And that you put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. That's your life now. You're a new creature. You're a new man. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 1, you put off what? Malice, evil speaking, all of these things. And as newborn babes, you desire the sin-sealed milk of the Word that you may grow thereby. American Standard, grow unto salvation. Here are these qualities. Apply. What comes out of your mouth? What comes out of your feet? What comes out of your heart? Your charity. What comes out of your attitude? Your spirit. What comes out of your faith? Faith comes by hearing, hearing by the Word of God. Why do I practice what I practice? Because this is what the Bible says. Why don't I practice what I don't practice? Because the Bible don't say do it. That's where my faith is. Impurity. Oh my goodness. Could I talk an hour to young people on purity? How many of you parents are terrified of your child turning to be a teenager. You thought the terrible twos was bad. Wait till they're 12. At 2, you was a little bit smart. The time's coming when you're going to be viewed as not having any intelligence at all. And then what are you going to do about that? And you have what I call that come to Jesus meeting. Y'all ever had a come to Jesus meeting with your child? By the way, some of mine started at first grade. You come home talking like that? Where'd you learn that in school? That's cool language, Dad. Your mama don't talk that way, and I don't talk that way, and you definitely not going to talk that way. And you're not going to walk that walk, and you're not going to talk that talk. I'm a bad daddy. Let me tell you something, folks. Are you listening? When my kids were growing up, I didn't intend to be their friend. I intended to be their daddy. That's what I intended to be. And when you get older, you and I might be friends. But right now, I'm the one with the experience. I'm the one with the maturity. And if you're lucky enough, you might live to be my age and be glad you had a daddy that was that strict on you. How about it? Shake or nod? How about it? Right now, you're their mama. You're not their girlfriend. You're their mama. You are her example. You are his example. You are a believer. Show them. Show them in your home. By the way, you'll make the church's job easier. I have never believed the argument that the church is losing its young people. I have never believed that argument. It starts in the home. I wasn't born into the church. I was born into my family. I've spent more time with my mom and daddy than I ever spent with my Sunday school teacher. My role model was my parents. That was my role model. By the way, if you knew my daddy, you better be thankful you weren't raised by my daddy. Because the philosophy that I'm talking to you about is exactly what I was raised. My daddy many times cleaned my ears out from my backside. And I didn't like it. Here's a line you do not cross, son. Well, who are you? What do you know? Now I get it. I get it. All this smart intelligence we all thought when all these chemicals were running, cursing through our bodies just as fast as they possibly could course through there. And we thought we were bright and intelligent. And finally, somewhere around 21, 22 years old, when all that started leveling out, it finally started making sense. Oh, Dad wasn't as stupid as I thought he was. And now, oh, Dad, I got a problem. Can you help me with this? What is it? What can I help you with? Now, I'm not so much his daddy. Now, I'm his friend. Y'all get this right? Y'all get this right? Psychology calls it tough love. The Bible calls it agape. That's what it calls it. We're not killing anybody by setting limits. As a matter of fact, statistics have shown that young people want limits in their life. They want boundaries. They want to be shown by word and particularly by deed. Show me what a real man's like. Show me what a real woman is like. And I said, as close to this book right here as I possibly can, if you'll stay with me, you stick with me through thick and thin, I will let nobody despise my old age. But I will be an example of a believer in word, in manner of life, in love, in attitude, in determined faith, and in purity. And let's all die and go to heaven. Live to make a difference. The Apostle Paul stood before Felix, and after Paul got through preaching, Agrippa said, "Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian." Paul said, "I would that you were not only almost, but altogether what I am, except these chains." Is that a man who was an example before an unbeliever? "I would that you were not almost, but altogether what I am." Do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? Are you willing to turn from sin and your godly sorrow of repentance to walk into salvation? You willing to confess the faith that you have that Christ is the Son of God? Let's bury that old man and rise out of that water and walk a new life. And be the believer God knows you can be. You need to come back to your first love. While Tim, Larry, and I are standing here, we'll assist you while together stand and sing.